Do the next right thing to make your marriage sing.
All I ever wanted was to be in love with you. When your eyes met mine, I knew that this was really true.
Hello, welcome to The Music of Marriage
with Bob and
Evie. We've been here before for a couple years now doing The Music of Marriage on this awesome Middle Tennessee radio station, WAKM, with Daryl. You were here at the beginning, right, Daryl?
From the very beginning. I remember the day you came our way. You stuck your head in the door, and you were getting the lay of the land.
You remember that?
Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah.
I came in here, and because we had this idea churning for a while, Bob and I, and we're like, where can we? Well, we write music, and that's on our website, too, themusicofmarriage.com, so our songs are there. But we had been able to play live and do little workshops, which we still can do if anybody's interested, and talk about marriage, the music of marriage, in a positive, encouraging way, biblical concepts and stuff like that. But then COVID kind of put a damper on playing live, so I thought, you know, I'd driven by here before and thought, I wonder if radio would work. And actually, I'd been listening to Rush Limbaugh on the radio, and he had just been talking about how radio worked, how he got into it, and he sounded so cool. And then I drove right by here, and I thought, oh, I wonder about radio. Nah, not radio. But you guys were very kind to give us a opportunity to share, and so far, hopefully, it's been encouraging to people.
Well, I hope so.
I get comments that the program is well done, you know, and some people, nice. You know, there's a mix of people who listen, and some guys are like you. They've had great marriages and great experiences, but they, you know, that they still need encouragement and information. And I know you guys have said you try to tailor the program for everybody.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true, Daryl.
Yeah, that's good to hear, too.
We love feedback from our audience.
Well, we do have a way you can email us at themusicofmarriage.com, and we have a book called How to Make Your Marriage Sing, 5 Biblical Dynamics to Keep the Music Playing. Of course, there's more than 5, but it's been trendy to pick a number, so we were like, do we put 5 on there, or is that too trendy, because we like to be original? No, get no number 5. Then we finally did 5 just to help us organize our thoughts. And so hopefully today we're organized after being away for Easter and enjoying some time with family. And the last program that we did, we emphasized
the four love languages.
Yeah, from C.S. Lewis, the agape love, which is the Greek word. It's, you know, there are different types of love, as you all probably know when you think about it. And agape is kind of the love that God's kind of love that he gives to us, and then how we relate that in our relationships to him and to others. So that's kind of the overarching kind. And then there's the eros, which is like the physical, sexual attraction, that whole thing there, which has its place. But there are boundaries to that, right?
Right.
And there is also the other kind, I forget what that is.
Philia, friendship.
Yeah.
Friendship like type of love.
Philadelphia, brotherly love was based on that word. Getting along with each other.
Sturge, which is the relational, near relations loves, like within a family
right,
type
like
of thing.
Like your mother-in-law.
Even a man and his dog actually would fit under that category. But
how do we do those? So there's something in it for everybody, because nobody's perfect. And Jesus rightly and very accurately made points to the religious holier-than-everybody types. And that is not how any of us want to be, is holier-than-thou. Oh, we've been married, you know, 5,000 years. Aren't we great? You know, the thing is that God knows that we're all learning, and we will stumble, we'll do this, we'll do that, and we'll kick ourselves for it. We might congratulate ourselves, whatever we, wherever we're at, God is there for us to help us go forward in a better way. And I think the whole aspect of thinking about it, that, which is, you know, helps, because then you're not just going with your feelings, which they can only take you so far.
And right? They're generally unreliable.
But they are a good.
They have a purpose.
They are a good component, but obviously.
But you can't count on them to be rational.
to be our guide, because obviously there's times when you just want to cut and run from situations.
Daryl's laughing. He has something to say.
I had a counselor put it like this. You know, it was something to the effect, I'm not sure I have this exactly right, but it was, do the right thing and feelings will follow.
There you go.
You bet.
How about that?
Well, that makes sense. Perfect sense.
Yeah, that's why our little jingle, do the next right thing to make your marriage sing.
I'm not in harmony today, but
my throat's a little. I was doing my vocal lesson
yes.
with Brett Manning. Free advertisement, Brett. He has the best called Singing Success program. It's kind of like yoga for your vocal cords. Mm-hmm. If you think you're stiff, and then you start to say, every day I'm going to just take 10 minutes and stretch, or 2 minutes. All of a sudden you're like, wow, I can do this. And that's how it is with Brett. He gives you these amazing exercises. You know, he trained Keith Urban and other, you know. He was on that Can You Duet show with Naomi Judd and a couple others with the duet competition. But anyway, Singing Success with Brett Manning is for anybody. It's amazing. I didn't think I had much of a range at all, and all of a sudden he's like, wow, you know, you're the highest of all the sopranos. I'm like, what? What?
Yes.
I'm not. But
I always thought she was an alto because that was the range she felt that she couldn't go beyond until she took a lesson with Brett.
And it's much like marriage. The music of marriage, you have to do the work, like Gordon Lightfoot. He too, he remember, he said repeatedly in his did you watch that documentary, Daryl?
Yeah, If You Could Read My Mind documentary.
Mind, and he kept saying you have to do the work. And they even had footage of him getting out of bed in the 70s, in the middle of it. Somebody must have been filming him back then. He'd get out of bed in his little hotel room, sit at his desk in his PJs and write, because you have to do the work. So
that was the most well-documented documentary, actually. It's like there was always a camera on him from somewhere.
And you can document that. Yeah, it's amazing. I like the Beatles thing where all of a sudden there appear these old videos of what they were actually doing while we were just on the bus with our transistor radios or our new LP under our arm, all excited, because it was all about music. Would that it would be that way again. Maybe it will.
Maybe.
But anyway, we decided to apply our love for music to the concept of marriage. Since everybody loves music, we figure at least that half we might have some people interested in the music. So as we continue with topics to inspire us about marriage and relationships, we thought of talking about the completeness of what is required. Like we just said, Gordon Lightfoot, you got to do the work. It's a complete thing. If you go part way with it, but then you withhold some of that real estate in your heart for yourself in any relationship, that's the spot where it's going to always be a sore spot, and you're going to keep stumbling.
Yeah.
And what holds us back from giving all of ourselves, you know, all of me, like that song, which we're going to play pretty soon.
And usually you can discover that sore spot by the repetitiveness of your spouse's comments. if your spouse has to say something over and over again, like,
you're not listening, you
don't listen to me, you know it's a sore spot, and you know that, well, she's not making it up. So you know you're holding back something, right? You're not giving that part of you to your spouse.
I've heard that, you know, you can hear people, but that's different than listening. But life is busy, and our minds are full. So we can't, we have to accept that. We really have to accept the failures, right? And smooth over them. Actually, when I think about the vocal lesson that I did on the way in, over here in my car with Brett Manning of Singing Success, he helps you, like, what with the exercise to break through. There's this point where your voice flips, where you feel like, I can't do that. Like he would say, you're thinking, oh, I can't go there. I'm an alto. But he said in women, it's a different point on the scale with men. But in women, it's A, B flat, B, where your voice kind of flips and you're like, okay, I can't. Just psychologically looking at a C and a D or hearing it that high, I'm not even going to try. I wasn't made to sing like that. I can't do it.
And with men, it's F, F sharp, G. So it's just a little bit underneath the window.
Right. So what he does is gives you these vocal exercises that sound really strange. It's why it's better to do them in a car with no one hearing you. Because you're actually learning to go that distance, go into that territory that you've kind of cordoned off and said, no, I can't do that. This is same in relationships, in the music of marriage. Mm-hmm. No, there's this part of my heart that's kind of for myself. How much of, you know, I can't go there, you know, or my love, you know, I can't go all the way there. You're holding back, right?
Yeah,
same with vocally when you're singing. You're holding back because I said to him, it's all in your mind, isn't it? Because he got me going way up where Mariah Carey goes. I'm like, what? He says, you're the highest of all the sopranos. I'm like, what? No. But because he, from the outside, entered, you know, because we went and spent some money to have him open our eyes to what we can do, which we can all do, not just with our voice, but with our relationships. Like, how much better would my relationship be if I would just take that hard part, like where I think I can't sing high, or I think I can't like that person or have them in my life because, oh my goodness.
And I was the same way.
You know,
I told him, you know, when you're singing kind of a high note and you want to belt it and it has to be belted, and he's there, no, it doesn't have to be belted.
See, we don't need to yell at each other. You can speak softly. You can sing, what did he say? Light and right.
Well, first he said, you know, some people have what's called a microphone voice, like
Neil Diamond.
Gordon Lightfoot is an example. Neil Diamond he mentioned as an example. Sean Connery in acting, you know, he's always talking down like this. And, you know, he doesn't, you know, he always means business, but he never raises his voice or gets beyond that pitch. And, you know, and same with, yeah, some famous singers, that they don't sing like divas. So I was holding back because in my singing, because I felt that I should be belting this, but I can't because my voice can't bridge that range with power. And he said, it doesn't have to be powerful. It can be light and right. As long as if it's light and right, you'll hit it. If you try to push beyond your ability, you won't hit it. And it'll sound worse.
Or because you have this idea in your mind that you have to be all this. You have to be belting like a big loud singer does, but your voice isn't created that way. And with technology, of course, in the sound studio, they can make a very mousy little voice sound beautiful, and it is beautiful.
And big, like Alison Krauss, for instance.
If you hold her
in person,
voice.
She sounds like a mouse. But
very light spoken, which you are too. I often, most of the time, I can't hear you a lot of the times in everyday life. That's a big problem in our marriage.
What does the voice coach mean by they have a microphone voice?
They have a very narrow range of pitch. So Neil Diamond is always maybe in this range. Da 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 da. He doesn't go up. Wah, da 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 da.
Do they need a microphone? Or?
Well, also, yeah, good point. I mean, also, it means that he doesn't. It doesn't. You know, some singers tend not to belt it out like loud. Like an opera singer on a stage doesn't need a microphone. They can hear him in the back of the audience, in the opera house. But if your voice can't project, or if you don't project enough, you need a microphone to amplify your voice. You know, some people don't need that. And I even see, sometimes you've probably seen live performances where someone does have a booming voice and they have to stand back from the microphone. That's because they'll be amplified too much, or they'll blow out the...
We did a recording with our kids singing Shine On, O Star of Bethlehem. And so we got our kids, they were younger, and their cousins, to sing on the chorus. And our youngest son, who's the biggest and of our four kids, towers over everybody and has a very deep, booming voice naturally. And we had to put him like way back in the corner of the room as far as he could, because his voice would stick out above everybody else. So we all have a natural, projection level.
He had the Barney Fife microphone.
I guess.
They turned it all the way down. that was funny.
You could relate that very well to this topic, all of me.
Well, you can.
You know what you do? You give all, and the part where you think you can't go there because you don't want to, whether it's singing in a high range or whether it's reaching out to that relative or friend or acquaintance who you have a strained relationship for whatever reason, and you think, you know, I'm better off just not dealing with it. Just maybe that's not the friend for me. That's not the spouse for me. You know, I'll never change. You'll never change. We don't challenge ourselves to go where man has never gone before, where voice has never gone before. But it's so encouraging when you do.
Yeah.
Give all of you, like C.S. Lewis said, we were listening to another one of his amazing radio broadcasts. There aren't too many original ones left, but on Sunday we're listening, and he said, you know, when you give all of yourself to God, all of yourself, he gives you all of himself and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But when you give yourself to God, oh, I'm a Christian. I go to church. I do this, I do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I really mean it. But we all have some areas where, in that area, I think I'm going to hold back, or I'm not going to go, I can't fix that, or I can't. Then you get all of God, but you may not get all everything else thrown in. So it's this idea that of challenging ourselves to think, you know, where are those areas where we're holding back, and, you know, what are we holding back?
Yeah.
So to think, to analyze, so what am I holding back? And it is helpful when you have someone else who's skilled, like Brett with the voice, or God with the Bible, or C.S. Lewis with his insight, or, I mean, everybody has skills and insights that can help fill in where we're missing stuff, where we keep stumbling, you know. And it can be everyday habits that wear people out around us. Maybe we're late all the time. Maybe we talk too much. You know, maybe we always think we have to have the last word. Maybe we are self-centered with our money, or I don't know, whatever it is. We all have something. And we're going to rub our spouse the wrong way because of our faults. And then we're going to rub other people the wrong way. And we need to address those areas. You know, we can say, well, mostly I'm a good person. And I do love God and I go to church or I, whatever. Mostly I'm a good person. So, but it's in marriages that are perfectly good, or relationships can really be disadvantaged. and not being all they can be.
Yeah, and we think in spiritual things that we meet God's requirements because we do what you just said, you know, go to church and smile and shake hands and go to Bible study, small group and all this stuff, and we pray and pay our tithe and all that, or help someone in need, or we generally try to be good people. But we tend to, and I'm saying in general, not meaning every single person, but in general, I think the tendency would be to think, you know, we pretty much got it together as Christians, and, you know, I think God's pretty happy with our life. You know, of course, nobody's perfect, but, you know, we're always working on perfection. But we kind of stop there, right? You know, the nobody's perfect thing, and what does that do? Well, it's true that nobody's perfect, nobody ever will be perfect, but it also tends to give us a little wiggle room to say, therefore, I can hold back part of myself and not give everything to God that He demands of me. And or maybe I just don't think that far. I don't ask what does God completely demand of me? Or when I think this or that thought, you know, does God require me not to think that or to think something else instead? Or the words I use, things like that.
Well, so we apply that to marriage.
Yeah.
But this is this agape love thing we were talking about before, which is God's kind of pure love that is given completely, not because He needs anything from us, just because that's who He is.
Right.
And often we love with these subtle, we want something back. We want a good reputation. We don't want to lose our job. You know, we want money. Mm-hmm. We want, you know, whatever it is. So in the sense that we... Oh, why did I...
Well, God's love is not a need-based love.
Right.
Either from, you know, from our perspective as well. In other words, we have to insert God's love into all our relationships without any expectations in return.
And that's that place where we have a sore point with somebody. And mm-hmm. maybe it's our spouse and you think, oh, how many times do I have to tell him? How many times is she going to keep doing this? You know, blind spots that we all have.
Mm-hmm.
That other people see very clearly that we don't see because, you know what, it takes effort. We have to do the work.
Yeah.
We have to say, you know what, okay, am I willing to do the work to mend that relationship with that relative, with that friend, with my spouse in that area? Or are we just mm-hmm. going to let this kind of fester
mm-hmm.
and just be this source point that we always have. Kind
because
of.
It's too uncomfortable to deal with, or because we've grown not to like the person and maybe not love the person.
So we think that we can stop there at that certain point.
Yeah.
So we can have so many good things going on, but why should we stop short? Like, why should I not sing in a higher range if I can?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to do the work, you know? Thankfully, I have a longer drive around town since we've moved a little further out. So that's the perfect chance for me to do those vocal lessons, you know?
Or maybe I think I can hit those high notes, but I'm afraid to because I might blow it, you know, in public. And so I hold back and I do something else. Like in ice skating, you know, they're going to do a triple axel and it turns out to be a single. Well, fear entered the picture and... The skater knew they could do it, but they were afraid they might blow it. And so it reduced the beauty of that thing into something, you know, ordinary and unworthy of points.
So giving all of yourself in to God has to come first, which means you do your very best that you can do. And we will fall. And a lot of times they're about, oh, here she comes. She's going to do a triple sow tower, whatever that thing is, and you're all ready and thump, they go on the ground instead, you know, and the whole audience. But this is what happens with all of us in different ways. So the idea of giving all of ourselves isn't, you know, God knows that we're going to fail. And so his love gives us that grace, that grace space that we talk about in the book, grace space, to give people room to be the failures that they are. Because guess what? There's a bunch of failure in me that I would like people to give me room to be, you know?
Yeah.
And we just don't want to deal with those. They're hard to deal with, and it takes kind of some analyzing and thought, but at least reassuring the person. Sometimes the hardest thing is to be honest and say, you know, I want our relationship to be good. I know I have character traits that keep causing a sore point between us, but I want it to be good, just so you know. And even that is a good footing to start on, you know.
Yeah,
and from there you can build on the strengths. So I think that we should hear from Ella Fitzgerald this song called All of Me that a bunch of people have recorded, but I thought she did it really great with the Nelson Eddy Band Orchestra back in the day.
All of me, why not take all of me? Baby, can't you see I'm no good without you? Take my lips, I'll never use them. Take my arms, I wanna lose them. Your goodbye left me with eyes that cry. Tell me, how can I go on, dear, without you? You took the part that was my heart, so why not take all of me? All of me, why not take all of me? Can't you see?
Pat back with the Music Marriage with Bob and Evie, and we're talking about the subject, All of Me. How often have we thought, how often have you thought about all of you? Are you giving all of you to your husband or wife? And are you giving all of you to God? Are you holding back on some things? Do you ever ask yourself, what am I holding back on? Because I know that things aren't 100% perfect in all of these relationships. And it could be your friendship as well, or a family member, or a child. In all of these relationships, there are frictions, disappointments, heartaches. And we often allow those things to color the relationships and determine how we treat people. But if we submit those relationships, as we were speaking about last week in the Four Loves, then if we submit those things to God's love, then we bring them under control and keep them from going bad. Because to be able to handle frictions, disappointments, and heartaches, you need to go all the way in terms of giving yourself to God in order to give yourself to the person with whom you're receiving those disappointments and frictions. And the reason is because you can't really handle it on, you can't handle those things without doing that. Without submitting them to the submitting them to God and crucifying yourself and moving it, getting yourself out of the picture, so to speak. But it's not just a removal of yourself like Zen philosophy would have you think,
where there's nothing to fill the space.
Right. No, that's not the thing. It's in God's world, whatever you remove or deny or stop doing, you have to replace it with something that God requires of you. And so, what does Jesus require? To deny yourself. If you want to follow, if you want to come after me, deny yourself. Take up your cross daily and follow me. And it's a daily thing. It's daily. He used the word daily. And so how often do you wake up in the morning thinking that sequence of thoughts? Okay, I got to deny myself. Whatever burden I have to take, I got to take that thing up and follow Christ where he's leading.
All the way, all of me.
All the way, because you know, in any relationship, but especially in marriage, because that's what we're talking about primarily, the extent to which I give myself to my spouse completely mirrors how much I give of me I have given to God.
Hmm. What you said about the way we treat people sometimes, oftentimes, is based on we stop at a certain point. We're not going to give all of us to a person who keeps annoying us like that.
Right.
There's going to be a place where I say, you know what, sorry. You're just too much trouble. You keep on being inconsiderate. You keep on being
annoying.
Disappointing. You keep on fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. And enough's enough. So I will go 7/8 of the way, but after that, I'll maybe be polite to you if I have to, but in my heart, I'll be icy.
Yeah.
Well, you can sense that from people, and that is not of God, you see. We could never even dream of having a relationship with God if he said that to us. Oh, well, you've screwed up so many times. I mean, you've been married 52 times. Or 5 times, or 2 times. That's no good. You're not good enough. Oh, you're this, you're that. The whole thing, the whole message, which is so fantastic, is that God's not limited. He doesn't limit his love toward us based on our performance, but we limit our love mm-hmm. toward our spouse or our friends based on their performance.
Yeah.
It's not a performance-based love that God gives to us. That's the agape love that we get from him, no strings attached,
mm-hmm.
except, hello, he's knocking like, hello, you know, have you given all of me? He's always reminding us, but he's always having mercy on us, and he keeps giving us good stuff. That's how every relationship we have is supposed to be, every single one.
Yeah.
So if there's people who have polar opposite political views and they want to do things in your town, in your country, make laws, change everything up, do this, do that. If there's a spouse who has an opposing view on something, if there's a mother-in-law, a son, a whatever, step back and get centered in where's your heart supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Our love for people shouldn't be based on their performance, you know? And when we give mm-hmm. that to God and start praying instead of holding back part of us in relationships, then it's pretty powerful how God just opens things up and things become easier for everybody. So our job isn't to play God and to be the person's judge and say, you're done, you're finished.
Yeah, because even saying that, you're holding back something from that person, and that is unconditional love. It's, you know, your love then is based on conditions. You know, if you speak nice to me, I'll be nice to you. If you do well at this, you know, I'll applaud you. If you don't, I'll criticize you, etc.
In other words, I can do wrong if you're doing wrong.
Yeah.
That's kind of the basic thing that you teach Johnny when they're 3 years old, you know. At least we did. We don't have a Johnny, but I was taught, you know, then I started seeing in the 80s, parents would say, hey, if somebody hits you, you hit them back. I never was taught that. I was taught you don't do, you know, bad just because someone does bad to you. You know, and when we get this mentality that we are allowed to keep this part of ourselves and defend ourselves, but, you know, God's our defender and our protector. I'm not saying we shouldn't defend ourselves ever, you know, mm-hmm. physically, but
I have a slightly different attitude about that, but that we can.
Our mentality is.
But you have to know Evelyn to appreciate what she's saying, because she's the type. She might say that, but she's the type who will go into the middle of a gang fight and break it up.
and she has,
to my dismay, of course, you know. But
you just go in like their mom. Hey guys, hey, and they're like, "What? Who's this lady?" Thankfully, I didn't get mowed down, but anyway.
We needed to send you to Chicago here a few days ago.
Yes.
Oh, was something going on? Yeah, there's always something.
She, like Bruce Lee, knows the art of fighting without fighting. He said.
Spring cookies. Anyway, well, it's something to think about, all of us, you know, and is anything more important than our relationships? What do we have in life? If we're full of tension, we think about this person, there's sadness. We think about that person, there's sadness, there's struggle. And how we can overcome evil with good, which is what we're commanded by God, that starts in our heart, and it starts with us trusting God that he can fill in all those gaps. Mm-hmm. And we can say, you know what? I don't want to have anybody I can think about and think, oh, they're mad at me for something. You know, or whether it's my spouse or anybody else. So,
yeah, I want to just also get back on this all of me thing. You know, we've probably heard things like, you know, don't hold back, sayings like that, or give it all, or really give it, you know, but not give it to them, but give it for them. You know, how, you know, is it just kind of like a nice saying, a nice thought, you know, but how far does it really go? And it's, you know, and again, we, you know, this whole idea was inspired by something C.S. Lewis said in that, and it had to do with the question of what does God demand of us? And he said it's not so much of our time or attention that God demands. It's not even all our time and attention. It is ourselves. And, you know, I thought, you know, do we ever ask God what does God have to give us? And he went on to say, God has nothing to give us but himself. He can give that insofar as our self-affirming will retires and makes room for him in our souls. And is there anything God has no claim on in our lives? Well, he claims all because he is love, and he must bless. But he cannot bless us unless he has us. So when we try to keep within us an area that is our own, we keep an area of death, and therefore in love he claims all. There's no bargaining with God. And so that's very, very profound, and it should just really make us pause wherever we are in our day if we hear this or have that thought. That, you know, it's not just that God's demanding. God will forgive us a million times, but he won't compromise on what he requires or his standards, because he can't fully love us then, because he is perfect, 100% perfect love, and he wants to give us all of that. And the only way he can is when we give him all of ourselves. And that's exactly the same in marriage.
So how does this song, Anything More Than You, have to do with that you wrote?
Yeah. Well, I thought of the idea of all the, you know, all the times I say I love you to my spouse, or the ways I love my spouse. But then I also thought, is how many other things do I love also in, or even instead of my spouse? And, you know, what areas of my life am I holding back, you know, for myself and loving, and therefore robbing my spouse of the love that she deserves? So that's the message behind this song, Anything More Than You.
Said and really should have done, and I hurt the only one deserving love I held while on the run. Uncertain seeds I've sown, struggle to get back again. Tears of choices made all on my own. Only see a fire. I on the pieces broken, taking everything.
Welcome back to the Music of Marriage with Bob and Evie, and we have a website, themusicofmarriage.com, where we have a book you could get for sale at Amazon, right, mm-hmm. on the link there.
And podcast as well.
And podcast.
Of some of these radio shows.
And songs like the one you just heard that you can download. And so all of me, all of you, all of us, we each know we're each equally valuable to God, by the way. In God's eyes, none of us is better than another. So if we're looking down on someone or excluding someone or whatever we're doing, we might want to keep that in mind. God mm-hmm. doesn't look at me as any better than anybody,
or if we're not,
including my spouse.
If we're not allowing ourselves to be vulnerable in a relationship, we're holding back something. We have an area in ourselves that says, I want to be safe and free from harm and hurt. And so we're not really giving all of ourselves when we do that.
We're afraid to approach the enemy, which we see as this person. And it could be our spouse. It could be, again, other people. But we're either afraid or we're just so hurt that we feel completely crippled by it. And it is true that even the Bible does recommend in certain situations to be realistic about, you know, not to give up hope, because he says to pray for our enemies. So that there gives you hope for any situation. But we're not saying that no matter what the situation, under all circumstances, you must, you know,
endure.
But that's a whole different topic, which we do address in our book, How to Make Your Marriage Sing, by the way.
Yeah.
We have a lot of insight from Jay Adams, who is kind of our mentor, and he was actually the guy who started the whole Christian counseling movement, because up until then, Christians were pretty much going to psychiatrists who most times didn't include God in the equation. And of course, with God in the equation, it's a whole different ballgame than without him in the equation, right?
Yes.
So if we give all of ourselves to finding out God's mind on these things and then ask him to help us, which he promises to do, we'll be pretty amazed, just like me with my voice lessons. Here I'm a coloratura, the highest of all the sopranos. It blew my mind, like, no way, no. But you see, I submitted myself to the voice teacher who would say, who would analyze me and say, you don't need to be limited as an alto.
Yes.
We don't need to be limited in our relationship with our mother-in-law. I use that just as side of the common, you know, we all know what we're getting at, sister-in-law, ex whoever, blah, blah, whatever, every human. If we start thinking of each other the way God thinks of us, then we will more easily be able to give all of ourselves, and it'll release so much toxicity, so much damage, so much unhappiness. And God does say, you know, be at peace with all men insofar as it is possible with you. Now, we often use that to say, well, I've done all I can, and so I'm done with X. I'm done with my dad. I'm done with my so-and-so. I'm done with my spouse. I'm done because I've done all that I can, and the Bible even says that. But you see, there's other things that the Bible says.
Mm-hmm.
Are you praying for your enemies?
Do you love your enemies?
Do we love our enemies? I mean, I'm reading a lot constantly about what's going on in the world with the power plays and the dynamics that are tearing apart, that are in play for the purpose of tearing apart what God created as an orderly, well-functioning society. So I'm very much concerned about that, because it is a spiritual war behind all this so-called politics, power play stuff. But I think of a few names come to mind of like these bad people doing these bad things to the world. And I always think they're the bad people. And then one, I think to myself, do I pray for them? Like, can you actually insert the name of your worst enemy? Mm-hmm. Some political person that you really have come to hate or not like a lot? Do we pray for them? I mean, the people that God used in the Bible to create fantastically, awesomely good vibes, right, between people, and fantastic, helpful, they were just great people. They used to be like murderers. You know, Saul, he went around all passionate. I got to kill the Christians. I got to kill them, man. That's my calling. And he'd go around doing that till God literally knocked him off a horse and changed his mind and his heart. Now he wrote half the New Testament. So, and we hang on his every word. Of course, his people didn't really know to trust him at first. Like, he's the guy that's like killing Christians. Now all of a sudden he's like a Christian. Like, what's this? So that's our humanness, right? But so we look at our enemies and we say, no way. No way could that guy ever become a good guy. No way could that relationship ever become good. And that's where we hold back.
And if we do, we may have to get knocked off our high horses. Right? It's true, because, you know, God can't use us otherwise. And your marriage, you know, you'll be forever emotionally dependent on your spouse for affection if you hold back yourself. And that's never a good thing. Relationships always go bad when that happens. But relationships always improve when you give all of yourself. And, you know, it's an amazing thing, but it's amazing to those who do it, let's put it this way. Like, if, you know, is it hard to love God? It's not hard for those who do it. But for those who just want to talk about it and, you know, have this fuzzy picture in their mind or glamorous picture in their mind about it, of course I love God. You know, then that's not necessarily a confident statement.
And to wrap it up with the idea of when Jesus taught, this man said to him, you know, really rich man, hey, how can I be saved? You know, Jesus is out and about and crowds are following him. How can I be saved, teacher? And God knew his heart, how much he loved his riches. He says, well, go sell all you have and give it to the poor. God's like, thanks anyway. Right? I'm not going to give all I have. On the other hand, the church leaders would make a big display of how good they were, how much money they put in the temple there. And Jesus said, see that widow over there? She has one little penny, one mite, whatever, a penny. That's all she has. She gave all she had. She gave more than these rich guys who were so proud of how much they were accidentally on purpose letting everyone see that they were putting in the offering basket. So it's all about our heart. Mm-hmm. And when we give it all to God, he gives us himself and everything. And we'll find that with our relationships too. And being tax day, we have to write out a check. Oh my goodness. And you think, do I have to give it all? You know? But Jesus talked about that too. He said, give to God what is God and to Caesar what is Caesar's. And you think, they sure don't deserve it. They don't use it right. Why do I have to write out this check?
We believe it in principle, but we're reluctant to give it, you know. So,
but that's where you trust God. Yeah. And then he does things like that. Like, this is what happened when this conversation was going on with Jesus. And a fish popped up out of the water with this gold coin in its mouth. Yeah. So you might be surprised. You will be surprised. We're all surprised when we give all of ourselves to God, how much we get back.
And to each other.
So Devoted to You by the Everly Brothers probably is a good
way to end this. I'm so